Welcome to the Paleo View. I'm Stacey Topp. I lost 135 pounds and drastically improved my whole family's health adopting a paleo lifestyle. My husband Matt, who happens to be the producer of this podcast, and I blog our recipes, successes, and struggles at paleoparents.com. Matt and I have authored two cookbooks, Eat Like a Dinosaur, a family-friendly recipe and guidebook for kids, and the upcoming Beyond Bacon, which is a paleo recipe book respecting the whole hog, nose to tail, due out in hardback July 2nd, 2013. We have a passion for family-friendly meals that are practical, affordable, and sustainable to the earth, as well as our long-term health.
And I'm Sarah Ballantyne. I was a scientist before becoming a full-time stay-at-home mom and the blogger behind thepaleomom.com. I'm also the author of the upcoming book, The Paleo Approach, available for pre-order now off Amazon and due out September 28th, 2013. Both my blog and The Paleo Approach are heavily focused on the autoimmune protocol. I also blog about the practical application of the paleo diet and share wonderful recipes.
Next up, news and views, where Sarah and I catch up and you get to listen to our gossip. So, Sarah, we're back.
It's we're just back. Us
because I proclaimed that there would be something this week. There is something this week. We're here. We have a show. But it's just you and me.
Just?
You know.
On. Yeah. No, I know. And I'm not at home. I am at home. That really confuses my kids when I say that.
Practicing your Canadianisms.
I am. Although it's really funny. My mom's like, yeah, even when you say it in the Canadian way, it doesn't sound Canadian anymore. So I was saying something like, oh, I said route. And then I corrected myself and I said, I mean route. And she was like, yeah, even when you say it in the Canadian way, it doesn't sound Canadian anymore. I'm like, well, I have lived in the States for 8 years. It is going to water down my accent eventually. I'm trying to absorb as much of it as I can, but it's hard because I'm not actually leaving my mom's house. Like other than a couple, you know, short trips to the beach, with the kids, I've been just working on the book I'm editing, which is, the most fun job in the world. And I do mean that sarcastically. it's kind of an interesting process because I feel like I'm watching my book get better, and it's a really, like, there's so many times where I, like, look at the edits. I'm like, yeah, it's awesome. But then it's just such a long and draining process, this whole analyzing how every sentence is phrased to make it the best it possibly can be. So I'm just finding it, like, just really tiring and draining.
Yeah, that's the thing about what we were saying, like, it just gets more intense as you get closer.
It's just a big job. I think, like, I'm kind of enjoying the process. I'm kind of enjoying, like, I really think my editor's done a really spectacular job, and she has caught, you know, just the tiniest little details where a sentence could be taken in the opposite way of how I mean it and be confusing. And I just think it's just a testament to the amount of effort that she's put into her part of the job. But yeah, it is a big, big job, and I would much rather be on vacation right now since I'm, you know, home visiting with my kids, and I'm working. So,
but at the same time, your mom's probably helping out, right? Like,
oh,
it's got to be so much easier.
Cooking and cleaning and, watching the kids. And, it's sort of easier in a lot of ways and harder in some other ways. Like, I really miss my treadmill desk, and I sort of feel every once in a while like there's more distractions because I don't have this part of the house where I can, you know, go to and hide. So wherever I'm working is where everybody is. So I'm kind of working with all of this background chaos. But at the same time, I'm not having to cook and clean. My mom folded the kids' laundry today. My mom's making me, like, awesome food. I've had organ meat every day I've been here.
I saw that. Your mom is way, like, almost even maybe more hardcore than you in a creepy, awesome sort of way.
Is she more hardcore than me? Well, so the first 3 days she made breakfast sausages with beef heart and ground pork. And then yesterday and today we had kidney for breakfast with kraut every day. Yeah, no, that's about the same as me.
Yeah, you've trained her well.
Or, well, maybe the apple doesn't fall far from the tree.
Yeah, and I know she likes sardines because she got on me for not eating sardines. So.
Well, and, like, I brought some of, like, the good sardines with me that my youngest really, really loves. And my mom is, like, watching to see if she'll eat the whole can. So then she'll, like, swoop in and she'll look at me and she's like, is it okay? I'll be like, yeah, you can have it. I can always get another can. So, yes. But, I mean, that used to be when I was growing up. Sardines were our picnic food. Like, we would literally bring bread from the local bakery, which I wouldn't eat now. But growing up as a kid, I remember I had very fond memories of it. And sardines and, like, a knife. And we would go have a picnic. And what we would do is we, like, cut slices of bread because it would be, like, an unsliced loaf and open a can of sardines and stick sardines in there. And that would be our, like, picnic lunches.
Yeah.
I'm just saying the sardine bandwagon's probably pretty small, but it still feels like awesome to be on it.
I don't know. I think in the paleo community, I'm in the minority here. I realize that I'm a bad paleo person for not endorsing. But the thing is, I totally highly endorse sardines if you can stomach them, but I also wholeheartedly think that food is not just only medicine. It's also a, what did Joel call it? Like it's a sensory experience. I forget what he called it, but I just feel.
It's as much about feeding your mind as it is about feeding your body.
Right. So for me, I can't do sardines, but I do broth. I do my chicken liver mousse. I do all kinds of stuff like that on a regular basis to make up for.
Is it the texture of sardines, the flavor of sardines, or the idea?
I love anchovies. Like, okay. I will get a Caesar salad with extra anchovies when we go out to eat. Obviously, no croutons. It's like a special thing that I will get for myself. I like the flavor. I don't think it would bother me. It's the bones. It's
the texture of the bones. Mm-hmm. So I was a kid who would, like, open the can of salmon that has the bones in it and, like, just want to eat the bones.
Yeah, that's what we give our cat.
Oh, you need to save him for me. That's totally impractical, but. And my youngest, like, that's actually what she's eating for supper right now because we're having shellfish and we're pretty sure she's allergic to shellfish. And so she's, like, we went out and bought her, like, canned salmon. And I was like, look, honey, it's, like, the salmon with the bones. And she goes, it's the salmon with the bones? She was so excited. It was pretty adorable. I guess the texture doesn't bother me, so I get to just enjoy the flavor. But I understand, like, the texture's different than other things. And I think it's okay if you don't eat foods if you really don't like them.
Yeah, so that's the point. That's a philosophical opinion that you have there. And I will bring us back around to that. But before I do, I just want to tell everyone a couple of announcements. One, we haven't plugged it in a while. If you haven't recently made a review on iTunes, we would absolutely adore you for doing so. Sarah and I can kiss a tissue with lipstick and send it to you in the mail. Just let us know.
It'll be really awkward for us to kiss the same tissue since we're nowhere close to each other. So it'll be two separate tissues.
Yeah. Point being.
And you mean reviews on Amazon for Beyond Bacon, just in case there's any new listeners out there.
Yes, that would be awesome as well. But iTunes specifically for this podcast because it helps new listeners find the show. The way iTunes.
Yes, I just assumed you're plugging Beyond Bacon. Everybody do both.
What did I say? I said iTunes, didn't I?
I thought you said Amazon, but maybe I just wasn't paying attention.
You have Beyond Bacon on the brain. I have a show on the brain. It's fine.
I'm nothing on the brain. Are you kidding me?
No, but if you leave an iTunes review for this show, or maybe they have one on Stitcher and stuff too. I have no idea. Frankly, Matt handles all that. But I happen to know that the way iTunes works is that iTunes ranks shows by mostly reviews. They don't actually rank it by downloads. So the more active people are reviewing and ranking a show, the more chance we have of new people finding it.
Which is that true? They don't factor in downloads at all?
That's what Matt's research has indicated.
Hmm, interesting.
So, because you can't actually find out downloads, and who knows? I'm not the expert, but I do know that it's heavily factored, if not entirely factored, on user input, reviews, rankings, blah, blah, blah. So, the other thing that I want to mention is that I've got a series going on social media that I'm calling Hey Girl Paleo that everybody should check out.
Hashtag. Love.
Right now, as of now, Sarah, you've only seen George, but I've got some new ones coming that'll be good by the time the show airs. And I'm tackling all of the our favorite men of paleo who are all awesome. So Bill Staley, my husband Matt McCary, you know.
George.
Well,
who
else? I already did a ton of George.
Yeah.
Pete's Paleo. I got some good stuff up my sleeve. So Rob Wolf. I got a good one for Rob Wolf. So if you want to see my little funness and get yourself a good laugh, check out on Instagram or Twitter or Facebook, hashtag HeyGirlPaleo. And if you have ideas, make your own and post them, because everybody's just checking the hashtag. It's not just me. Other people are doing it. So it's a lot of fun. And I'm really excited about it because I haven't had an opportunity to just do something fun for a while. It's always been like, let me work on this thing, let me work on that thing. And so right now I'm like, hey, I don't really have any deadlines for anything. Let me do this thing that's funny. And I'm enjoying it. So that's good.
I just felt very jealous there.
Sorry.
It's okay. It's all for the greater good of something, something, something.
You were doing some fun stuff while I was where you are. I was a little jealous.
Yeah, no, it's true. There was fun not that long ago. Now there will be fun in the future. It's funny. I'm working on some like really epic posts for the blog, but it's happening in these like tiny little bits of pieces while I'm like, well, I have 15 minutes, which really isn't very much time to do editing. So I'll write a paragraph for this like blog post. So when I'm finished this round of editing, if I have a couple days off, I'll hopefully get those together. Otherwise, it will have to wait until the book goes to printer. But I do have some like really, really cool topics coming for blog posts eventually. Yeah.
The last fun thing that I want to mention is that my oldest son, Cole, has joined Instagram.
And I follow him.
He's adorably obsessed, first of all. It's his first social media experience. And of all the media that we use, I'm most comfortable with him doing Instagram. He's wanted to start Facebook for a while, and I just don't think it's quite appropriate for him at his age. But Instagram is a lot of fun for him, and we have a like old phone that's basically like an iTouch because it doesn't have phone anymore. So he's able to Instagram his food and stuff in the house, and we get a lot of questions about what our kids eat. So if you're interested in seeing what our kids eat, or you want to show your children what other paleo kids are eating, you should follow Cole on Instagram because he adorably posts his and his brother's food. It's so cute.
It is very cute.
Maybe just as a mom.
And you just earned him like a couple thousand more Instagram followers.
I know. Diane from Balance Bites messaged me a couple days ago. She's like, oh my gosh, your son already has 500 Instagram followers. And it was like his first or second day. I'm like, I know, it's already gone to his head. Like, he's constantly like showing me his phone when it blows up. And he's like, look, I have 28 new likes. I'm like, yep. But no, I'm glad that people are enjoying it. And I'm working with him on how to take better photos, because a lot of the photos that he's taken have been like dark and blurry. So we're working on that, which is kind of cool, actually, to show him some stuff, because he's seen me do it for so long, and it's interesting to him, and so he's really excited to learn. He's kind of outgrown the, I want to help you cook. I don't know if it's his personality or his age, but, I mean, he'll help me if I say, I need your help. Like, he's more than happy, but he's not, if I say, hey, let's make cookies, and you lick the spoon, he's like, eh, whatever. You know, whereas Finn will, like, jump up and down and freak out with excitement. So this is a little project that we can do together where I feel like we can connect and have
that excitement.
Yeah. So for what that's worth, just wanted to make those announcements. So that is, I think, it for my announcements. Now I can bring it back around to philosophical differences.
Sweet. So why don't we tell people a bit about the show? Because it's actually the first part in a however many parts it takes us to go through these topics. I'm guessing probably three, but maybe even four shows. I don't know, depending on how rambly we are.
Okay, well, first I want to reference a couple of posts and material that I think that people mm-hmm. should check out if they don't already. The first of which that I think we'll probably mention several times is Are You a Paleo Perfectionist? By Diane Sanfilippo of Balanced Bites. I think that post summarizes really well in a succinct and level-headed way some of the stuff that we're going to talk about. I think also Monica will put some links in the show notes of both your and my blog about transitioning families and coming up with your own version of paleo. And then the last thing I want to mention is Chris Kresser as a resource is really got, I think he's got a new book coming out. He's got an ebook program right now, and I know he has posts on his website about coming up with your own version of paleo. So, what's that?
Yeah, and I actually have an entire tab called Paleo Philosophy that under my Eating Paleo menu on my blog, which I'm sure Monica will link to as well, that is full of posts where I've sort of dissected some of the issues that we're going to be talking about today.
Yeah, I mean, I know we've got, I think we call it Paleo Journey. I mean, it's like this huge thing that for both of us, we've been doing this for several years, morphs over time. And I think the thing that kind of was a trigger for us that made us realize that this is something that we wanted to talk about a little in depth on the show was, I posted on my Facebook wall that Matt and I were having a conversation in the car about how we define, paleo differently now than we did before. So when we're giving someone an elevator pitch, you know, during the first year, it was, you know, why are you eating this way? Well, we're gluten and dairy free. And most people understand, or at least we could cite, you know, studies to children's behavior going gluten and casein free. And they got that. And that's kind of how it was easy for us. And then year two, we kind of evolved that. And I think in a lot of the interviews that we did around Eat Like a Dinosaur, this was our philosophical thought was the removal of processed foods. You know, and so then people would say, well, you know, what do you mean processed foods? And we would say, well, if you can't grow it and eat it yourself with basic tools, then it's processed in some way. And we try to limit that. So grains aren't just something you grow and put in your house. They're going through a severe processing plant. And, you know, trans fats and canola oil and all that kind of stuff. It was easy to describe to someone that that was a processed food once they thought kind of mm-hmm. with a little more in depth, like, oh yeah, that's processed. Rather than, you know, then too, how is someone going to argue with you if you say remove processed foods? Like everybody knows processed foods isn't good for you. And then the way that we've started defining it now in our third year, actually, I think this is our fourth year, but who cares?
it's all the same.
It's all the same. Now people ask us about our diet, and we kind of hesitate to say paleo. We've always hesitated to say paleo because I think a lot of people think of it as a fad diet or caveman diet and recreation, and you have to face all those questions that's just, frankly, I don't want to deal with for most people. So now when people ask us about our food, we say that we focus on eating the most nutrient-dense foods possible and foods that aren't irritating to our gut. So we say that's different for everybody. Some people tolerate, you know, dairy fats. Some people don't. Some people tolerate white rice. Some people don't. But for us, we try to focus on eating foods that are the most nutrient-dense possible and that cause the least amount of inflammation. And that really has started good dialogue with people because then you can answer the questions that inevitably come up about calcium and fiber and all that kind of stuff. Mm-hmm. You've already hit it off the bat by saying, nope, that's not the most nutrient-rich source of calcium. Actually, my kids eat green veggies on a regular basis. Or, you know, those kinds of conversations are easier to have if you've already told someone that you're aware of and focused on nutrient density. But it certainly wasn't something we were comfortable and knowledgeable on the first year. So this gets to organ meats and sardines and all those kinds of weird things that we eat. We're comfortable with that now because it's nutrient dense, and we realize that, is that my favorite thing to eat? No, I mean, I could eat paleo brownies with coconut milk ice cream every day, but that's not the most nutrient dense food, so that's a treat for me. So anyway, Matt and I were having this conversation in the car, and I summarized it on the Facebook wall, and there was a lot of kind of banter and thoughts around it. And Sarah,
it was something that I read, and I was I had my hackles raised a little bit from a few comments here and there. I can't remember if they were on the blog or my Facebook page, and the sort of combination between those and a couple recent critiques of the paleo diet that I felt really misrepresented the paleo diet. So, you know, like the diet they were criticizing, yeah, I agree with, but they weren't criticizing the paleo diet. And so I saw that Facebook status update. I'm like, oh, we should do a whole show on that. Yeah.
And then we started planning out the show, and we realized that it was at least two shows. And
if not three.
Because yeah, you're in Canada and you're finishing a book, it was like, oh, maybe it's three shows.
Yeah, exactly.
So I just want to tell everyone I stopped walking the treadmill desk. So can we just talk about this treadmill desk podcasting for a second, by the way? It's not that I'm like out of breath from walking on a treadmill. It's that my breathing changes and I can't focus on like deep breathing and breathing the way that you should when you're exercising when I'm talking the whole time. So if you heard me out of breath, it's not because I can't walk 1.4 miles. It's just because you can't walk and do a podcast at the same time. So
yeah, I found the couple of podcasts where I was walking during the podcast. Every time I had to do science with Sarah or something where
right,
I was
for a really long, a lot, yeah,
for a long period of time, I had to stop because yeah, it would start to, yeah, like sound out of breath, even though I'm not, but yeah, I just have to breathe more frequently because my body needs the oxygen.
Exactly. And then you're, yeah. So sorry about that, everybody.
I didn't notice, by the way.
Oh, I could, yeah.
Anyway. I know you could tell, but I just, you know, probably most people had no idea.
I'm sure Amy's like, I could tell because Amy tells me all the time after listening to the podcast when we've done something wrong.
Thanks, Amy.
Loyal listener. Okay, so we aren't going to have like a science on this because, you know, we'll talk a lot about the science.
There's going to be a lot of science mixed in with all of these topics that we've sort of laid out. So I kind of felt like we should just
we're going to reference a lot of the science we've already done, right? I'm sure you're going to reference back to the dairy podcast. I'm sure you're going to reference back to, you know, grains and saponins and all this kind of stuff that you've already defined for people. We'll just kind of be referencing back to those sort of things as justification for our personal paleo philosophies and what we think might be helpful for you to research and look into for developing your own philosophies. So with that said, we just have some general topics that we're going to talk about. I'm sure, Sarah, you were saying there's going to be opportunities for soapboxes because
yes,
we both love the opportunity whenever it arises. And
nothing better than a soapbox.
And we're going to probably touch on some
controversial issues?
Controversial issues, yeah. I'm looking at the very first
Actually,
one.
Let's start with controversial issues. Yeah. Let's start with defining the controversies in the paleo community, because I think I actually see this as a real strength of our community, that the areas where the science is less conclusive in terms of nutritional guidelines, there tends to be some pretty dramatic variation in opinions over what's the best for human health. And sometimes those opinions come from somebody reading certain studies and not reading others. Sometimes it comes from people's own personal experiences, their own preconceived notions. I mean, I don't mean to say that they're, you know, prejudice against a particular macronutrient or whatever, but that we all have, you know, certain ideas and backgrounds that influence our thought processes. And that's perfectly normal, but that certainly is seen with certain controversial areas within the paleo community. And what ends up happening is a lot of these areas that are areas of debate, which you know, should be constructive. You know, let's talk about this aspect, this aspect, this aspect. They sometimes get very nasty. They sometimes get very heated debates, just because people have such strong opinions. But also, all of those areas where there's controversy also tend to be the areas that are highly misrepresented, or people have are really misinformed. What their idea of what a paleo diet is are based on some of the more extreme opinions in these particular areas. And it's also there also tend to be the areas that open up, because of that misinformation, open up paleo diet to more criticism, and often valid criticism, because the criticism is sort of criticizing a really extreme point of view one way or the other when it comes to these areas. So I thought, you know, we're talking about paleo philosophy, like, why don't we start with just being really upfront about where there is a variety of opinions and where there is, you know, controversy or debate, or debate's probably a better word than controversy, but where, you know, we're not all uniform in our opinion about certain aspects of a paleo diet.
So I think before we do that, I just want to give an example to what you said, because I think it's really important and powerful. And I have two examples that were groundbreaking for me and my understanding of paleo, and how our leaders are critical thinkers, is how I would define it, right? Like, they're
yeah, absolutely.
They're smart, and they're critically thinking, and it's not just, okay, let me define this. So the first example that I can come up with that was really powerful for me was when Rob Wolf changed his stance on omega-3 supplementation. Mm-hmm. And that happened when he had a fish oil calculator years ago that calculated how much fish oil that you needed to consume, and depending on your body weight and what you're consuming, and blah, blah, blah. And Chris Kresser came onto the scene, and Chris Kresser kind of talked to him about, hey, this oil can be oxidized, and your body can't really absorb just fish oil if it's not absorbing the other nutrients that it needs with it. Some of the things that we've talked about before, like the benefits of fermented cod liver oil, is that it's a whole food source rather than just being a particular oil supplement. And Rob Wolf said, dude, you're right. I changed my stance on that. And it was so cool. I mean, of course, there was information that came out, and it was like, here's what I think about this, here's why. And for me, that's when I discovered Chris Kresser. And it was like, wow, what a smart dude, you know, and how cool is it of Rob to have listened to this smart dude and to come to a conclusion for the benefit of the community rather than his own ego. In my opinion, that's...
Yeah, like, he wasn't, I mean, up until that, he actually had Chris Kresser on his podcast, and they actually talked about it on his podcast, where Chris Kresser, like, referenced, oh, maybe it was on Chris Kresser's podcast. It was one of their podcasts. And Chris Kresser had a ton of scientific studies showing short-term benefits to omega-3 fats, but long-term health risks associated with supplementing, not with omega-3 fats in general, but with the high doses of fish oil supplementation. And prior to that conversation, Rob Wolf was recommending it pretty much across the board for people on a paleo diet to supplement with fish oil. And he, you know, completely backed away from that, other than, you know, sort of these few occasions where you would do doses, supplementing with high doses short term for like 4 to 6 weeks to change. This is where I can get science-y. DHA and EPA are inserted into the cell membrane of every cell, as is the omega-6 arachidonic acid, AA. And there's a bunch of chemicals that cells make to communicate within the cell and with neighboring cells. These are called autocrines and paracrines. And the formation of these autocrines and paracrines, they're actually metabolized from AA and EPA and DHA, and you get a different autocrine or paracrine depending on which fatty acid you start with. And the ones that are made with arachidonic acid tend to be much stronger stimulators of inflammation compared to what's made with EPA and DHA. And then the other thing with having those fats in the cell membrane, it actually changes the physical properties of cell membranes. So a cell membrane, and this is why it's so important in neural health, a cell membrane is actually much more fluid and flexible. It's called plastic when it has more DHA and EPA. So when you, the idea behind these high doses of fish oil supplements when you're first trying to address health issues is you basically flood your system with omega-3s so you can correct the ratios of those fatty acids in this, that are embedded in the cell membrane. And then you kind of, you do it just as a transition, you sort of correct that imbalance, and then you just get your essential fatty acids from diet after that. Because the sort of long-term effects of consuming high amounts of oxidized fats over time are correlating with all kinds of, you know, higher risks of disease. Whew, that was a Science with Sarah. Minnie?
Yeah, there you go. You didn't even know that was coming.
I had a suspicion.
So another, you know, I'll try to make this quick, example is Mark Sisson. Mark Sisson's recommendation for intermittent fasting based off of research that was done males only. And Stephanie Ruper of Paleo for Women kind of came on the scene and said, hey, there's actually research out there that indicates that this could be negative to female hormones in particular, and produced a really engaging and in-depth article on...
Oh, that's incredibly well-cited.
Yes, on her research and thoughts on that. And again, Mark came out and said, dude, I hadn't even thought of this. This is awesome. I'm down, you know, in like a professional sort of way. And so, you know, what I hope that we can do when we talk about these differing thoughts on paleo is to have that conversation so that if you have a particular thought on something in particular, be it, you know, how you feel about starches or how you feel about some of the things that we're going to talk about as, you know, are they paleo or are they not? We're going to have a conversation about what our thoughts are and why. And, you know, Sarah and I aren't in agreement on everything that we do. We're two separate people. I mean, of course, we have a lot in common. Some of the thoughts that we have differ. Some of them don't. If you have thoughts that differ or don't, give consideration to some of the points that are being made so that you can mature your own paleo philosophies as well, because it's really to the benefit of the community. So that's all I have to say about that.
Oh, awesome. So, you know, I think that right now the two biggest sort of contentious issues within the paleo community fall under sort of the general, it falls under macronutrients as a general umbrella. But carbohydrates are like a big issue. And there's a huge variety of opinions about what type of carbohydrates should be consumed for optimal health and how many carbohydrates in relation to fat and protein should be consumed for optimal health. That's a huge bottle of worms. And I suspect that's probably all we will talk about for the rest of this podcast. Dairy is probably the sort of the other big contentious issue of like, is there a place in our diets for dairy? You know, what about high quality dairy? What about dairy fat? And so we can talk about that later. But I really want to talk about carbohydrates, because there is the one extreme of, there's more than one extreme here. It's not a line. It's not a pendulum. There's the extreme of, you know, even fruit should be avoided because it's a sugar. There's the extreme of, well, humans didn't start eating starchy foods until more recently, so fruit's actually easier to digest, so we should only eat fruit and we shouldn't eat starchy vegetables. There's the extreme of, you know, we should be eating lots of safe starches, including white rice, and we should be aiming for, you know, 300 grams of carbohydrates a day. Then there's the extreme of, we should be avoiding carbohydrates. We should all be eating low carbohydrate. We shouldn't go more than 50 grams a day. Most of us should be in nutritional ketosis. I mean, and all of these communities are really well represented within the umbrella of a paleo diet. And I think it's in part because when you look at the scientific literature, and there is quite a large amount of scientific literature evaluating the role of carbohydrates in health, there's, depending on how you set up your study, you can end up with very, very different results. And this, my feeling is that this very likely reflects the fact that humans are actually able to thrive on very, very different macronutrient ratios. And when you look at sort of hunter-gatherer or horticulturist type societies and evaluate the macronutrient ratios of their diet, there is a huge amount of variability. And these people are all very healthy. When you look at the Eskimos, and 90% of their diet comes from fatty animal products. So 90% of their diet is fat and protein, and 10% is carbohydrates. And then you look at the Katavans are the, you know, often we all talk about them, often cited, other end of the spectrum, where I believe it's, you know, 55 or 60% of their diet is carbohydrates, and only 10% is protein. I may be misquoting that, and I'm sure we can add the actual percentages into the show notes. But, and then you have everything in between. So, you know, it looks, to me, I feel like the quality of the food that we're eating, that the nutrient density of the food that we're eating is far more important than how much of that food is protein, fat, and carbohydrate. And I think that there's probably a large portion of the paleo community that agrees with me there, that it's more about the nutrient density and the micronutrients than the macronutrients. But there's science to support the whole spectrum of opinions as well. So it's an issue that will probably take some really well-designed and really extensive clinical studies to really nail down if there is an optimal macronutrient ratio for human health, or if it depends on your metabolic history. So, you know, someone like me, who was morbidly obese and pre-diabetic, if I have a different sort of optimal macronutrient ratio than somebody who was never obese and is athletic and works out a lot. And that, I mean, that makes sense to me, that my body's needs are probably different than their body's needs. But this is kind of why I just don't like counting. I just want to eat the food that I eat, and it's just pick healthy food.
Well, and I know for me, starch became something that I needed to include because I didn't have a gallbladder. So starch is something that I did. I lost more weight when I wasn't eating as much carbohydrate, but then when I put it into my diet, my nutrient deficiencies and overall health became much better because I was absorbing food. Because the starch balanced out the fats that I was eating, because my gallbladder wasn't able to digest them without that balance. So, you know, there's a huge variety of different reasons why someone should or shouldn't include starch. And, you know, one of my good friends in the community is Russ from The Domestic Man. And Russ is what would be called the perfect health diet rather than paleo. But for me, we're all ancestrally aligned. Like, I just, what I like to refer to the way that we choose to live our life is based on ancestral health or ancestral wellness or an ancestral inspired lifestyle or however someone wants to say it. Because we take so many principles from Weston A. Price, and we take so many principles from, you know, different things that we've learned along the way. And, you know, if there's a better word for it, I'm open. But ultimately, for me, it's not about paleo or primal or perfect health or Weston A. Price. It's about taking all the fundamentals from those different geniuses that came up with all of them and saying, now what works for you? You know, and for me, rice gives me a pregnant belly, but boy, does it taste good, you know? Like, so I can't do rice, but I do need carbohydrates. So I eat root veggies more often on the days that I work out. And if I'm having high fat foods, like sausage, I know that I need, a carbohydrate to balance that out. So, does that make it paleo or not paleo? I think this is kind of one of the essentials that we are going to need to talk about before we move on. I will admit right now that every food blogger that you know is exhausted of being asked the question, is that paleo or is that not paleo? I can tell you right now, you're listening to a podcast. That's not paleo. A Paleolithic man did not listen to a podcast. So if you have to ask yourself if something is paleo or not, the answer is probably no, right? The answer is, if we're defining this diet to be eating the most nutrient-dense foods possible, you know, and unless you're about to consume liver dredged in egg yolk, then it's probably not. But that's not to say that it's not part of a healthy, balanced life. And for me, I'm not going to go around eating my entire meals and making those meals for my children, because it's not socially normal and it will affect your emotional well-being, which is also really important to the lifestyle. So if you're wondering if something is paleo, you know, define what that means for you. For me, that means grain-free, legume-free, refined sugar-free, and dairy-free. Occasionally, my family has grains as a splurge. Occasionally, my family has dairy as a splurge. We never have gluten. We never have high fructose corn syrup. We never have red dye number 40 because it makes my children turn into a nightmare. There are certain things that, you know, are absolute never touch for me. And then there are some foods that are like, okay, it's a Saturday afternoon. You're probably going to be crazy, but I'll put you to bed early and I'll deal with you tomorrow. Because it's a socially normal thing, whether it's a birthday party or, you know, whatever it is. Is that the best choice I can make? No. Would I define that as paleo? No. But I also don't define myself as paleo because I am Stacy. I am a person who is incorporating a paleo lifestyle. I myself am not paleo. And I think that's really important for people to, like, understand, to make this a lifelong endeavor for themselves.
Awesome.
You like that?
Yeah, that was good. I have to say, one of the things that I find even more irksome than somebody asking, well, is arrowroot powder paleo? Is, which, I mean, fair enough. I Google it, but fair enough. sorry. But, the other thing that I dislike is when people, rather than asking the question, like, I think asking the question is different than shutting somebody down and saying, well, that's a lot of fruit. That's not paleo. Because I see that a lot, that people will follow where they learned about the paleo diet is, you know, one of these, maybe sometimes older, because certainly like the original version of the paleo diet by Lauren Cordain came down pretty hard on starchy vegetables. When he revised it, he still didn't like potatoes, but he was kind of like, well, sweet potatoes and stuff are okay. But he still was more like really pro fruit, but then you get the low carb, low sugar group that were really anti fruit. And so what I find really, raises my hackles is when I see these really judgmental comments that are reflecting an idea about carbohydrates that is not a consensus. So, you know, to say, well, you know, you shouldn't be eating so many starches, that's too high carb, or, well, you shouldn't be eating so much fruit because that's really high sugar, or, well, you know, potatoes, are they paleo or are they not paleo? Well, they're a root vegetable. I don't eat them because they're nightshades and I have a real problem with nightshades, but they're a root vegetable. And some people do really, really well with lots of root vegetables. So, you know, I think that if you want to eat potatoes, go ahead.
I think what's really powerful that you just said, because I wholeheartedly agree, is the word shouldn't. And I challenge everyone, not just in paleo, but I challenge everyone to consider very thoughtfully anytime they use the word shouldn't. The word shouldn't is actually a four-letter word in our house, and my children and my husband aren't allowed to use it, and neither am I. Because it's up to no one to tell someone what they should or shouldn't be doing. If someone asks your opinion, or if you want to give your opinion, feel free to say, you know, I think that this is too much fruit for me, so I'm not going to do it.
Yeah, but own it.
It's another to say, you shouldn't eat so much fruit. You don't know what that person's situation is. You don't know that that, you know, paleo brownie isn't preventing them from going to McDonald's and eating four, you know, brownie sundaes and freaking large fry. Like, you have no idea what people are
going
through.
Does McDonald's even have brownie sundaes?
I don't know. McDonald's in here. I was trying to think of those pancake muffin things, because that's what I used to do.
Oh, griddles.
Yeah, those used to be my downfall. So anyway,
we
shouldn't have mentioned that, because now everybody's thinking about it. But
no, sorry, guys.
My point is just that if you make judgment upon someone else, which is what you're doing when you use the word should, then you are participating in behavior that is negative and is in a downward spiral. And in my opinion, that is only leading to personal problems, personal negativity that is coming out in a venue that people often feel very comfortable with through the internet, because they don't have to talk to someone. They don't have to look someone in the eyes. They can just say a lot of nasty things. They might not even realize it's nasty, because to them, they're just saying exactly how they think and they feel. And they're not really thinking through, there's somebody on the other side of the computer who is feeling something when they say that. And so, you know, one of the really powerful things that I heard when you were talking, Sarah, is the examples that you gave of the way people are talking to one another that are negative. In both instances, he used the word should.
Yeah.
And I think that, you know, everyone should really consider what you're telling other people should or shouldn't do. Even my kids. Like, it takes energy for me not to say, you should do this or you shouldn't do that. It takes energy to say, Cole, I expected you to clean your room and I'm disappointed that you didn't. I need you to go clean your room now. It would be much better, not much better, it would be much easier for me to say, you should have cleaned your room today and you didn't, so go do it. Like, I get that that's easier, but it's a huge difference in how he perceives what I'm saying and feel in that way. And so, you know, we're on a soapbox. But
I did say soapbox opportunity.
This is like really powerful for me, because when I was in therapy, one of the things that years and years ago, one of the things that someone told me is I kept saying things about myself. Well, I should do this and I shouldn't have done this. And I was judging myself and putting so much stress and pressure on myself that it was a constant shame of I could have done better. But rather than saying it that way, I was saying I should have done this. And so I learned when I was a teenager that the word should, like my therapist told me, I never want to hear you say the word should again. You come up with another word to say what you're feeling and thinking. And I have carried that through lifelong. And so I think it's really powerful when people are considering, you know, telling someone, a food blogger or someone who's eating something, to say, you know, if you don't like the idea of paleo bread, first of all, probably Sarah and I are not the right match for you. But so if that's your case and you like us for other reasons, that's great. But if that's the case, then the better thing to do is to say, you know, I personally don't eat this sort of food because I feel better without it. Or this sort of food is a trigger for me. I am seeing other people on the wall exhibit behaviors that show that they still have an emotional attachment to food. I would, you know, suggest giving that up for 30 days and seeing how you feel, rather than saying you're still overweight, you shouldn't eat paleo bread, which is what we see nonstop with people on the wall. And it's just, you know, that.
And it perpetuates the misinformation. I mean, that's the other thing, beside it being unnecessarily aggressive and judgmental, it perpetuates the misinformation about the paleo diet. So, you know,
and totally turns people off.
Yes.
You know, you have no idea how many transition people we have in the walls who are just looking for helpful recipes to get them away from white bread and white pasta. And, you know, for a lot of families, they use the kind of recipes that we have on our blog for the first couple of months, the first year or two, or whatever it is, to transition their family. And if someone says, oh, I'm getting judgment about this nutrient-dense source of food made with nuts and pastured egg yolks. If I can't even eat this, then I give up. And I can tell you, I've gotten emails from people that tell me, I wanted to try paleo, but the community was too intimidating and too judgmental, and therefore I gave up, you know?
Yeah.
Okay, so our show next week will, we won't have to dive so much into philosophical and blah, 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 and we'll try to get through a lot of the other topics that we have on here. Just to give you a preview, we're going to talk a little bit about our thoughts on fat and dairy. Mostly we'll reference other shows that we've already done, though, but we'll tackle it from a philosophical standpoint and try to keep that to a minimum so that we can get on to, you know, it being represented as a meat diet. And while you're waiting, I would encourage you to check the hashtag more vegetables than a vegetarian. I enjoy posting pictures of all the vegetables I eat. And you should start doing that, Sarah, because you eat more veggies than me, I think.
I do eat like crazy amounts of vegetables. I should.
Yeah.
I should have posted my supper last night because I literally had a plate heaped like 4 inches high of vegetables. Cause that's what I was craving and that's what I wanted. And, I should do that. I will. Not should. I will do that.
See? So we'll tackle that. We'll talk about, if you can be paleo and still, you know, eat conventional produce or conventional meat. We'll talk about, macronutrient ratios, to a percentage of, you know, nutritional ketosis, some of the other stuff that we're not really touching on when we talk about the foods that we just talked about. Nutrient density is a really good one for us. Paleo perfectionism and how people perceive the 80-20 rule and orthorexia, which is a big topic for Sarah and I. Maybe some of the scientific rationale for paleo. There's a lot of different things that we aim to cover with these philosophical ideas. So, the next show will actually be Let's Cross Our Fingers, Blood Sugar Regulation with Amy Kubal. Barring any Canadian catastrophes or sicknesses or Skype fails. And then we'll follow up that show with part two of Paleo Philosophies and hopefully give people what I aim this series of shows is that it gives people confidence to feel comfortable with what they've chosen to make their healthy choices. That's really my goal with this show is number one, you know, feel comfortable. Number two, also take a critical look at how you're defining it and why. And, you know, are you making decisions for yourself that aren't optimal and justifying them in some way? That's for you to decide. We can't judge you. We can't tell you what those rules are. So we're just going to talk about some topics and encourage you to critically think for yourself. And perhaps if you're taking massive amounts of oxidized fish oil, you, like Rob Wolf, might reconsider that. Anything else you want to cover?
There's lots, which is why this is going to be a multi-part podcast. I really want to talk about, you know, some of these issues where there is no consensus. And I kind of want to use these shows as a little bit of a rebuttal for some of the more recent critiques of the paleo diet that have been out there, because I feel like this is probably, you know, I feel like our listeners are probably on the same page as us for most things. But kind of what it does is it also, I'm hoping, will help give people a little bit of maybe confidence engaging in these discussions and defending their personal choices against these sort of more common criticisms that we hear so often. So I'm kind of hoping that we'll get into that a little bit more too.
Yes, me too. If we ever make it past the first topic.
Maybe it'll be a 10-part series.
Okay. Cool. Well, I will talk to you and Amy Kubal next week. Enjoy your editing and your kidneys with your mom.
Oh, my mom cooks good kidneys.
I adore you both. I hope your mom never cooks me kidneys.
You know what? I didn't think I even liked kidneys until a couple of months ago.
You got to hide them for me. I can't.
You can't.
No. Mm-mm.
Texture again? Taste.
Taste for sure. Well, actually, it's smell and taste.
It's okay. You eat liver. You're good.
Yep. Down with the liver. But it took me 2 years to get there, so.
So maybe in 2 years you'll be talking to me about this like amazing kidney breakfast you had.
I eat them like when they're ground with other things, but I've got to cover the flavor. So anyway, it's my own philosophy.
That's bring that whole show full circle.
Totally.
Yeah, so I will talk to you next week. I will be at my mother-in-law's next week, but again, with the kids somewhere in the background, I'll probably be, again, hiding in a room with the door closed, hoping they don't scream outside the door, and hoping the internet is fast enough that the sound is okay. And, have a great week.
Don't forget to check out iTunes and leave a review, and... we're going to have an announcement for a pretty epic giveaway related to Beyond Bacon next week as well. If you thought our recent giveaways have been epic, you will be very excited to see the giveaway that we're doing next week. And it is interactive, so we're excited about that. It's not just going to be checking a box and liking a Facebook page.
Okay, well, I'm excited.
Yeah, you should be. It's pretty epic.
It sounds awesome.
Cool.
All right, well, good night, everybody, and thanks for listening.
See you next time.
Thank you for listening to The Paleo View. If you enjoyed the show, please take a moment to rate us on iTunes. You can also support us by shopping for our favorite paleo products on the sidebars of our individual websites or by donating through PayPal.
We do have some soapbox opportunity, which I usually find fairly rejuvenating.
This is going nowhere real fast.